is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Steve Moore, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and tonight we are jumping on to talk NBA. A lot of developments since last Tuesday when we talked. We're going to break down the battle for the 8-9 seed, which is ongoing as we speak. We're going to talk a little Lakers-Bucks and their vulnerability, and then we'll just kind of go through some of the other news of the day, Ben Simmons, etc. So I wanted to start out today by just doing some quick housekeeping. First thing is we have two new podcasts that are going to be coming online very, very soon. One is another NBA team podcast. We've already have Cavalier Central with Justin Matcham that covers the Cleveland Cavaliers. Next up will be Grizz and Grind with Elijah Campbell. So we're looking forward to that. Elijah's going to do a great job covering the Memphis Grizzlies. Then our other podcast that's going to be coming soon is The Players Court with Joseph Harris. That's going to be a podcast dedicated towards middle school and high school basketball players who have an ambition of eventually playing college basketball. So it's going to be for players by players. And Joseph's going to be talking to players at all different levels, talking about their journey, what they did in order to help themselves get to play college basketball. And then, as I've said a few times on the podcast, we are continuing to build the Hoopheads Pod Network. We are still currently looking for other podcasters who are interested in hosting their own NBA team podcast. So if you are a fan of a particular team, if you already have a team podcast and you're looking for a home for that podcast, if you've ever thought about creating an NBA team podcast, please reach out to me, mike@hoopheadspod.com. And we are in the midst of building what we think is going to be a terrific network of basketball podcasts here on the Hoopheads Pod Network. So Jay, that takes care of housekeeping. I'll turn it over to you to lead our way through the NBA bubble jungle.
Do you hear that song in the background, Mike? It's Here Comes the Suns, doo-doo-doo-doo.
I know the song.
Look at that. You know that song.
That's the Beatles.
We have to start off with the Phoenix Suns. If someone would have said, I bet you $1,000 the Phoenix Suns will be 7-0 in the bubble going into their last game, I would have taken that bet and told them that if they were, I would also throw in the fact that I would eat a coffee mug. if they went 7-0, I don't think anyone could have possibly seen this coming, right, Mike?
No, I think all you have to do is go back to listen to our previews of what we thought was going to happen in the bubble. And I basically remember the gist of our conversation was, why are the Phoenix Suns even being invited into the bubble? So clearly you and I did not think, along with every other NBA prognosticator, nobody saw this coming. And yet what's crazy about it is they're 7-0. They could potentially go 8-0 in the bubble and still not make it into the play-in games. So I don't know what's going to happen. What they've done has been nothing short of amazing. Booker has been incredible throughout these seven games. Ayton is looking like still maybe not as big, still a mistake to pass on Luka, which we'll talk about later in the podcast, but maybe not looking like as gargantuan of a mistake. He's seemingly is starting to get it together, particularly on the defensive end of the floor. It seems like him and Booker potentially could be two guys that you could build a legitimate NBA playoff team around. So to answer your question, no one in their right mind saw the Phoenix Suns going 7-0. I think if you had to take a bet of would the Phoenix Suns go 0-8 or would the Phoenix Suns go 8-0, I would be willing to bet that 99% of people out there would have taken Suns at 0-8 over the Suns at 8-0 or even 7-1. I mean, come on.
Yeah, pretty ridiculous. I think that it just shows, like, I think we can argue that this team is young, right? You would say this team's pretty young, right? Correct?
Yeah, they're still young. I mean, they brought in Ricky Rubio, but otherwise, yeah, they're fairly young. I mean, their core of guys that they're playing a lot are all young guys. And don't forget, they also have Kelly Oubre, who hasn't really played at all in the bubble. So they got some nice young pieces. I mean, clearly you need the guy, and it's becoming more clear watching Devin Booker during this bubble time that maybe he's not quite there yet on the level of a top 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 player in the league, but he's close. He's close. And as a scorer, he's right up there. And Ayton, again, he's second year in the league. He's probably, I don't know, was he 20 years old? And big men we know typically take longer to develop. It seems like he's going to be a really, really good player. Can he be a great player? I don't know for sure, but it looks like those two guys are going to be two guys that you can build around. And then they're going to continue to build some other pieces around there.
But Mike, Draymond says, get my man out of Phoenix. Did you see that?
Well, hey, I did see that. He got fined $50K for sharing that opinion. So good for Draymond there. And hey, we all know that these conversations are going on all the time. I'm sure Draymond has probably already picked up the phone and told Devin Booker that personally. He just decided for some reason to share that publicly. Probably not the best move for his wallet, but now it's out there. Doesn't seem likely he's headed to Golden State, but yeah, I guess you never know.
To be fair, though, the NBA does pay, or does have to approve him analyzing games. And like, I am not a Draymond stan here. I just want to be clear here. But whether he says that or not, I don't know how I feel about them fining him for doing something that the NBA asked him to do, by the way. It wasn't like he just said, oh, I'm going to do this. The NBA asked, like, I mean, they have to be in kind of some kind of concert in order to have him be on there, right? Like, he can't just randomly show up to NBA on TNT. He has to get a approval through the NBA, correct?
You would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny when I don't know if it was Charles or Kenny asked, are you tampering? Or maybe it was Ernie, and he said, maybe. that was the line of the whole thing. But I don't know. I Devin Booker surprised me. That shot he hit today, I don't know if you saw the shot that he hit today. From like the logo,
logo. I saw the show. Now that was yesterday. I think that was in yesterday's game.
Listen, they all run together with him. But that was pretty ridiculous, that shot. And I mean, no one's going to guard anyone out there. I mean,
from a standstill. If you ever played basketball and you know you're just standing there holding the ball and then looking around and then you're just going to rise up and launch, like that is a really, really difficult shot from anywhere, let alone from 40 feet or however far out he was when he shot that thing from the logo. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But it's exciting to see the Suns. I don't know. I was talking to you before we recorded this, and I was thinking, like, would the Suns-Blazers be the best 8-9 matchup? I kind of think it would be, right? I mean, that would be the most intriguing of all the matchups, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my opinion. I think it would be fun to watch.
It would. I'm just kind of trying to look through here the playoff seeding scenarios. Yeah, I think what makes Phoenix fun, and this is, I've said this on the podcast in the past heading into the playoffs, is in a lot of cases, you don't get to see, since we're on Eastern time, you don't always get to see all those late night games. I know I'm a late night person, and so I have a little bit maybe better opportunity than I used to, but still, you don't watch as much Western Conference basketball, especially back in the day when we were watching the Cavs, and so you're watching a lot of Eastern Conference games. So to be able to see Phoenix, who clearly was not on national TV very often, I think that's fun to be able to see a team that you just haven't seen very often. And so to me, the most exciting matchup now is Phoenix and Portland. I don't really want to see Memphis as exciting as Morant is without Jaren Jackson Jr. I don't think they have a realistic chance of making it into, I don't even think they're going to make it into the playoffs, even no matter if they finish in the play-in. If they finish as the 8, I think they'd go 0-2 and get beat by whoever gets the 9 seed. And then if they're the 9 seed, I think they'd go down in the first game and be done, because I just think that the way they are, they're compromised right now. So I'd rather see Phoenix and Portland. And then, I mean, you would have said a week ago that Phoenix had no chance of being competitive with the Lakers, but you look at how they've played to this point and then how the Lakers have played. And
good transition, Mike. Let's talk about the Lakers.
Well, you can talk yourself into Phoenix giving the Lakers a competitive series, but by the same token, I think once LeBron and AD kind of dial things up, that I don't know that Phoenix would be the biggest challenger. Portland would be the toughest out for the Lakers.
Mike, before you continue, we're recording this right now in the middle of the Portland-Dallas game. Dame just crossed the 50-point threshold with 6 minutes left in the game. He's the first Blazer ever to score 50 points in back-to-back games. So there you go. We'll see how this game finishes up. Dallas is up by 3 right now. So
let's address that real quick. So clearly, we've sort of professed our affection for Dame before, and just how clutch he is and how good he's been, how strong he is getting the basket. And just, he's just an amazing offensive player at his size. But those free throws the other day against the Clippers, if they don't make it in, man, those two free throws are going to come back and haunt Lillard and the Blazers, because I watched those. I think I texted you in the middle of it. I had some weird thing going on with my TV screen where I could only see it was zoomed in. I couldn't figure out why. And eventually I turned the TV on, turned it off a couple times, didn't help. And then finally, when they switched over to the, whatever the next game was, I think Utah was playing somebody, then it was back to normal. But during the whole end of that Blazers Clippers game, I was like zoomed in. So anyway, when I was watching Dame shoot the free throws, I couldn't see the basket. I could only see him shooting, and he short armed those two free throws. And you watched, I mean, I didn't even have to see where the ball was going. You could just see in his release that for whatever reason, he tensed up and missed them both. And that was clearly a big loss. If he makes those two, they go up one with 15 seconds to go. And that was probably as surprising a two missed free throws by a guy who's a great free throw shooter, by a guy who's been clutch throughout his career. That was unbelievably surprising to me. I did not see that coming. Talking about betting the Phoenix Suns going 8-0, I would have bet Lillard not going 0-2 in the line in that situation. I would have bet you just about anything.
And to be fair, the Clippers were laughing, but they might not be laughing when we get to the playoffs, because they might have ruined the best chance of knocking the Lakers out in the first round of the playoffs. You think about it. I'm not saying that the Blazers would do it. I'm not Charles Barkley over here, okay? But what I'm saying is, if the Blazers don't get in and get that 8 seed and they don't get to play the Lakers first, the Lakers are, in my opinion, going to cakewalk in the first round. I think they're a cakewalk over any of the other three teams. Would you agree with that? Or do you think Phoenix, I mean, maybe Phoenix could steal a game?
I don't see this Phoenix run. Part of you wonders, is it a mirage? Is it a factor of just the oddities of the bubble and how guys are playing and what each of these games means to teams? I don't know. It still seems like it's kind of a funky environment. So to say that Phoenix was going to go from being the, whatever they were, the 12th seed or the 13th seed, and somehow sneak in here and then go and challenge the Lakers, who have been 1A or 1B in the league the whole entire season, seems far-fetched. At least with Portland, you can make a case that, hey, this team went to the Western Conference Finals last year. They added back in two of their top six players for sure back into their rotation. You can convince yourself and make an argument that, hey, Portland can give LA a run for their money. I don't think you can, other than this feel-good story of Phoenix, I think it's fool's gold if you think that Phoenix is going to go in and actually challenge the Lakers and even make that a competitive series. I would be very surprised. And Memphis has no chance to make it a competitive series. And I would say San Antonio has no chance of making that a competitive series. So really, to me, if you want to have a competitive series for the Lakers in that first round, you got to be rooting for Portland to get in there.
Yeah, so I guess this is a good point to talk about New Orleans, the disappointment that was New Orleans and Sacramento. I mean, I think Sacramento, we kind of knew, wasn't going to make the play, in our opinion. But they were there with Phoenix, so I guess our opinions aren't necessarily always the best, Mike. But New Orleans was the big surprise, and there's several things that occur because of this. Obviously, no Zion, and he hasn't. I don't know. He played. The problem I think he had is he didn't play a lot of minutes. So he would just get exhausted. Obviously, wasn't playing or conditioning enough during the break, and who knows how much that comes down to an injury. And you know, when we went into this bubble situation, obviously everyone was excited to see the Pelicans, the young team, blah 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 blah. So that just I don't know if that deflates it. Whereas now, you know, you look at Phoenix, the opposite end of the spectrum. Now everyone's excited about Phoenix and their prospects in the future. So, I, you know, I'm not saying that the Pelicans are going to be terrible next year. I just, they didn't quite live up to the expectations. And the other thing to go along with this is this streak ends something that, or this ends a streak for J.J. Redick. He had made the playoffs in every single year of his career. And I think, I don't know, was that, I think he's been in the league 13 or 14 years, right? Something like that.
Yeah, so, I thought it was, I thought I remember reading or hearing at some point that it was 13 years, but I could be wrong.
So this ends the streak of J.J. Redick's career making the playoffs. And I think he's obviously, in my, I have to imagine he's the leader in the clubhouse. I don't think anyone's ever been to the playoffs or their first 14 seasons in the NBA. I would imagine that'd be pretty tough to do. So, it's a sad day for J.J. Redick. He was living that bubble life at the beginning of this thing, doing shotgunning those beers in the ice baths and things like that. But his facial expression when they were down by like 25 points in that last game kind of said it all. So
yeah, his body language and facial expressions kind of summed up the entire team there with the Pelicans. I think what's interesting about the Pelicans is you look at their three main building blocks or the guys that you think they're going to build around for the future. I'm going to leave Zion for last. Let's start with the guy who probably has the biggest question marks, Lonzo.
He was terrible
in the bubble. He played better throughout the season. Obviously, he changed around his shooting mechanics so that it looked more normal. He wasn't doing the slingshot across his body. And Lonzo does have some things that lead you to believe that on a good team, he could be helpful. He's a good defender. He's got good size. He rebounds well for a guard. He's obviously a good passer. But the scoring just doesn't cut it. And then I think if he's your point guard, and I just don't know what kind of a leader that guy is. Like, he just seems way too mellow. And then that goes to Brandon Ingram. Like, Brandon Ingram, you just don't see any emotion from him. And that's not necessarily always a bad thing, because a lot of times if you play calmly with your emotions and under control.
Like, he probably wasn't allowed to have any emotion. He had to hang around his dad all that time. LeVar took all the emotion out of the house.
So yeah, that could be.
So, I don't know.
Well, maybe then, I guess then we're hoping that the Cavs don't take LaMelo. But anyway, I think Brandon Ingram and Lonzo both, neither one of those guys strike me as being a fiery guy that you're going to build around and that's going to lead your team. And then you look at Zion, you say, okay, well, those two guys are both talented guys. They both have ability. They both could potentially have a role on a good team. Is Zion the guy that can get that out of them as a leader? And this is unfair to ask of a kid who's 20 years old. I get that. You wonder if Zion has that in him. And I think the big thing with Zion during the bubble here was, what kind of shape was he in? And there was rumors there, and there was the internet photo of his veins popping out or whatever. And people thought he was going to come back and be in great shape. And then he had to leave the bubble and whatever his family situation was. And maybe he didn't get to work out. And then he comes back and he's on a minutes restriction. But if you watched him in these games, like, he's overweight. And you wonder, is he a guy who literally can sit for a week and takes a week off, and all of a sudden he puts on 25 pounds like it's nothing? It seems like maybe that's just the kind of body type that he has. But I mean, if you look at him in those games in the bubble, and then you go back and you look at his body when he was at Duke, or you look at his body when, go look at his YouTube videos on, you know, the highlights from when he was in high school, it doesn't even look like the same. Like, that was a pudgy, fat kid playing for the Pelicans in the bubble. And then you looked at Zion at Duke, or you looked at him in those high school highlights, and it was like he was a totally different guy in terms of his body. And that worries me. Like, if you're New Orleans, you have to be worried moving forward that, is this going to be a constant battle? And when you're constantly battling your weight, then the next part of that is, are you constantly battling injury? Because you're carrying around all this extra weight, and especially with the high-flying things that he does, and as quickly as he can get around the court and all that, it just seems like there's a lot of red flags for where he's going to end up based on his weight and conditioning. And just, it seems like the propensity to be able to go from in shape to out of shape very, very quickly. And all that being said, in limited minutes. I don't know what his final stats were in the bubble, but he probably averaged close to 20 points a game and 7 or 8 rebounds. And, you know, he only played, I think the most minutes he played was the other day when he played like 25 minutes. So clearly when he's out there offensively, at least, he continues to kill. He continues to just destroy people on offense. Defensively has been another story. He's just been lost and clueless and whatever. And sometimes you wonder, is that as a result of his conditioning? I don't know. The Pelicans have a lot of decisions to make because Brandon Ingram, I think, is going to get the max, whether he gets it from the Pelicans, which is probably what's going to happen, or certainly if he went out on the open market, he would get the max. And then the following year, what do you do with Lonzo? I mean, I don't think that you're going to sign Lonzo to some exorbitant contract based on what you've seen so far, and yet he's a piece who's young enough that do they just let him walk in restricted free agency for nothing? Do they match? Does somebody kind of shoot them one of those contracts that they don't really want to match, but they have to so they don't lose the asset? I think Lonzo's going to be a real interesting case study here over the next year and a half as the Pelicans try to figure out what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, I was just so disappointed. And I'll be honest with you, every single time I put their game on, I was just like, ick. They didn't look like they were playing as a team. They couldn't make a shot. Zion, when he was on the floor, was a presence, but the problem was he wasn't on the floor enough. And, you know, that's definitely the biggest question that I have coming out of this for the Pelicans is Zion going to be able to A, stay healthy, and B, when he does get injured, can he stay in something that resembles shape? Because he did obviously wasn't able to do any exercise. I mean, I don't know what he did during the quarantine, Mike, but he was healthy. But he looked like he hadn't, I mean, I know he worked out, but it looked like he hadn't run or walked up a flight of stairs during quarantine.
Well, it's like I said, is he a guy who just, it only takes a couple days of him sitting around doing nothing for him to kind of balloon back up? I don't know the answer to that, but like I said, he definitely looked overweight in the bubble. There was no question. You just looked at his face, his body, like there was no real muscle tone. I mean, obviously he's still big, but he wasn't big muscular. He was just big and looked overweight. There was no definition in his body whatsoever. And we have to couch all this again by saying that he's 20 years old and he's going to mature over time and hopefully he's going to figure it out and eventually follow the lead of some of these guys who are the older players in the league like LeBron, who take great care of their body and spend their money to make sure that they're ready to go every single night. And hopefully he'll see that and eventually come around to that way of thinking. But just the way that he's put together, it seems like that's always going to be a challenge. And then I think the other question for the Pelicans is, what do you do with Alvin Gentry? Are you ready to move on from Gentry, or do you continue to ride forward with him? I know there's been a lot of rumors because of David Griffin and his connection with Ty Lue that Ty Lue is going to be the next guy in line for that job. We'll see. We'll see if they end up getting rid of Gentry at the end of the season once the Pelicans are out of the bubble.
Yeah. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen. I can't imagine they're going to put Ty Lue in that position. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but was Ty Lue really David Griffin's guy, or was Ty Lue LeBron's guy?
He's a championship coach.
Was Ty Lue David Griffin's guy, or was Ty Lue LeBron's guy?
I mean, I guess the question always comes down to who's out there. Who's out there that's a good coach, that's a difference maker? There probably are not more than, there certainly isn't more than 10, and there's probably a lot less than 10 coaches who really are going to make a difference if you put them on the sideline. Is Ty Lue one of those guys? I'm not sure that there was really evidence of that you could point to in Cleveland, other than the fact that in certain instances he got LeBron to buy into what they needed him to do.
Yeah.
But is that a recipe for getting Zion and Brandon Ingram to buy into what he needs them to do? I don't know. That whole Pelican situation, I know they're stacked for the future with the young guys they already have with all the draft picks, but they got to start to figure some things out in terms of how they're going to build their team. And do they need leadership from the coaching standpoint? Do they need leadership from a player standpoint? Is there a leader already there that's going to grow into the role? I don't know the answer to that, but it seems like that ship was a little bit rudderless and it was tough because Zion just wasn't ready to go and play. They needed him to play 38 minutes a game, and he was clearly in no shape to be able to do that. So as a result, they were probably the most disappointing team in the bubble based on the expectations going in.
Yeah, for sure. All right, one team that we haven't really talked about this at all at any of these podcasts, I don't think, has to be San Antonio, and they've exceeded expectations. I think everyone would agree. They've exceeded expectations in the sense that they're still in it. And I don't think anyone could have even thought that they were going to have a chance. You know, I'll be honest with you. I probably would think Phoenix had a better chance than they did coming in because, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is out. I mean, I don't trust DeMar DeRozan ever.
Well, you trust him to make two-point baskets. The analytics isn't kind to DeMar DeRozan, but he can get you buckets. He's never been much of a passer. He's never been much of a ball handler. He's never been much of a defender. But the one thing he has been able to do is score two-point baskets over the course of his career. And he's been very good at that, and they've had some close games, and he's been very good in the last 5 minutes here in the bubble. And, yeah, no one would have had the Spurs. I think since with their win today, they're 5-2 in the bubble, and nobody would have saw that coming, just like the Suns 7-0. And I don't know. They have as good a chance, depending on what happens with this Blazers Mavericks game. They've got as good a chance as anybody to, you know, come out and end up making them.
Dame just launched a three from inside half court. The ball hit the back of the rim and went straight up, Mike, and went in.
Does that make it 130-130?
It is 130-130. Oh, am I a little ahead of you?
I think I might actually be ahead of you. So I'm on the game cast. So.
Oh, okay. Carmelo hit a huge three in the possession before that. I will say Carmelo's balling out. I'll just put that out there.
Dame has 61 right now. So.
Yeah, Dame's definitely balling out. But
I think we can put Carmelo on the back burner and just talk a little bit of Dame Lillard going for 61.
Yeah. So
maybe this game will go to overtime and he'll have a shot at 70. We'll have to see.
Yeah, he could have 70 in this the pace that this game's going with all these fouls they're calling. I don't know. Anyways. Back on track. So let's talk Lakers-Bucks. We kind of started to talk and then we drifted away from that. The vulnerability of the Lakers and the Bucks. Let's start with the Lakers first. I have not liked what I've seen out of them. You know, at the beginning of the bubble, I thought, oh man, the college atmosphere. I made the reference to the pictures of LeBron, like doing the old school pictures when it was the Cavs. And I have to say, I've not liked what I've seen. And I won't say that their subtle jabs are starting, but the comments that have been made, there were some remarks in a post game. I don't even remember the exact remarks LeBron made, but basically was saying, like, you know, I'm here and doing what I need to do, and AD is doing what he needs to do, but we got to have everyone else step up and blah blah. I don't even remember the exact.
Let the subtweets begin.
The subtweeting, exactly what it was, but it didn't come across very good, but. Also, maybe he's trying to light a fire under someone's butt. But I mean, JR has hardly got any PT. I thought he was going to play more. When you're relying on Deion Waiters to have big minutes, that's not a good sign. Because he's looked good in one game, I think. But other than that, he hasn't looked very good. And whatever happens with the 8-9 seed, theoretically, if Portland wins, okay. Here's Portland. They're going to have to guard CJ, who's not played very well in the bubble, and Dame. And there's no chance that's going to happen. Quick update. Porzingis just fouled out, Mike. So might be a big moment here. Anyways, I just don't see how the Lakers can contain those guards. I don't. I mean, at the same time, I don't know who's going to guard AD and LeBron on the Blazers. I mean, Carmelo sure as heck's not going to. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting matchup, and I also don't know who guards Devin Booker if the Suns win. I guess they're probably hoping either Memphis or San Antonio comes out of it, because I don't think those two teams have a chance to beat the Lakers. So in one game, let alone four. So
I think with the Lakers, it comes down to you're betting on the top end talent of LeBron and Anthony Davis to carry you, especially through whoever ends up getting the eighth seed. Then you get into the second round and it becomes a little bit more challenging. Right now, the 4-5 matchup in the West would be Houston and Oklahoma City. And obviously that's still open to change and could end up being something different, but that's who it is right now at the moment. In the second round, if the Lakers were to play either one of those teams, with the Rockets, you got to deal with Harden and Westbrook. With the Thunder, you got to deal with Chris Paul. none of those matchups really bode well for what the Lakers could do defensively. And we're saying all this with the fact that the Lakers have been one of the best defenses in the league the entire year. And LeBron has clearly dialed it up from where he was last year. And we know he's going to dial it up in the playoffs when it's necessary. So I think it really comes down to, is what we're seeing in the bubble from the Lakers, is that real or is that a mirage based on some of the same things that we talked about earlier, which is it's just the absurdity of playing in the bubble and not knowing who's playing on a given night and what games are important to some teams and who's just taking the night off because their spots are already secured. And obviously the Lakers have secured their playoff position. So these games, yeah, they want to be playing well, but the reality is that the games are meaningless for them in terms of seeding. So you would think, and we talked about this before the bubble even started, you would think that these teams would want to get themselves back together and be playing well heading into the playoffs. But I'm guessing that for most of these guys who have been pros, that it really doesn't matter. They can get it together and become a cohesive unit when it needs to be. So I'm mildly worried about the Lakers, but it's definitely based on the supporting cast. I think we know Anthony Davis and LeBron, provided they're both healthy, are going to be monsters in the playoffs. And if both of those guys play at the level that they've played in the playoffs previously, then the Lakers are going to be fine, at least until they hit the Clippers, I would guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm just throwing it out there. Like, the matchups defensively don't look nice for the Lakers, and the way they've played hasn't looked nice. So I would still pick the Lakers to win those series, but I would definitely say give the other teams more of a chance than I would have thought at the beginning of the bubble. Conversely, the Milwaukee Bucks have not looked good, and we can start discussing what that looks like. And the problem that I see with the Bucks is, and we've talked about this before, is just Giannis's inability to close out games that are close. He just doesn't look, and I don't know if it's just him or if it's the play calling, like we've talked about in last week with Budenholzer drawing up the plays with Giannis inbounding the ball. But there's been two more games that he had chances to close the games out, and they just haven't done it. And I don't know what it is. You know, he didn't play last game, but it just, something with the Bucks isn't sitting right with me right now, and I don't know what it is. And I'm once again saying this is they've been historically great this year. Okay, they've been probably the best team in the league for most of the season, but I would say Toronto's played better than them in the bubble. I know Boston's lost a few games. I might even say Boston's played better than them for the most part in the bubble. I'm not saying Boston would beat them because I think there's no chance, but I'm concerned about the Bucks. And if they have to play Miami in the second round, that would not be good for them. I truly believe that.
Although that was the game that they played all their players and they annihilated Miami in the bubble. So that was the one game where
they looked good. Yeah, but Miami didn't have Butler. And Miami didn't have, what's his name? There were two players sitting for Miami. But I know for a fact Butler didn't play that game,
right? Yeah, Jimmy Butler did not play in that game, I don't think.
So, and I'm not saying Butler would have made much of it. I mean, he's a really good player, so he would have made a difference in some aspects. But I don't know. I don't know if I feel good about Milwaukee, Mike. I don't know.
All right, well, here's where I am with the Bucks. I still think they're the best team. I still think that they're going to actually get through the East fairly easily. And I say that just because I think Giannis is going to be that dominant. To me, the key moment is going to be Budenholzer's substitution patterns when the games are tight. Is Giannis going to play 40 minutes when he needs to? If he does, then I think the Bucks are going to be fine, because I think then they're going to avoid getting down into the last couple minutes of crunch time, which is where seemingly they've struggled. I come back to what I've said a couple times in our last several podcasts, which is Giannis, in the last 10 seconds, give him the ball and have him create a basket. I just don't see that happening, number one. And I understand why it's not happening, because he doesn't have that mid-range game. When you think of the game's best closers, the game's best finishers, there are guys who could be outside the three-point line shooting from there. There are guys who can put the ball on the floor, get to the rim. But if they can't get to the rim, they can pull up and hit a 17-footer or an 18-footer. And right now, Giannis just doesn't have that in his game. So what we've seen from the Bucks in the last two crunch time situations, one, he was taking the ball out of bounds with like 3 seconds to go. And then the next one, he was actually the screener in a play and then rolling to the basket. And so
in both times, Middleton took the shot, right?
Yeah. When you have the best player in the game, that's a guy that you should want to have the ball pretty much no matter what with the game on the line. And it doesn't seem like that's what the Bucks are doing, want to do. And it's understandable why that's the case. But then that opens you up to, if you need a big bucket, is Chris Middleton the guy that's good enough to go toe-to-toe with some of the other superstars in the league who are gonna make those plays? And I think the answer probably to that is no, which means Giannis has got to figure that out. So that's number one, that crunch time. Is Giannis the guy to create a shot the way other superstars can create a shot? So that's the first thing that worries me about the Bucks. And then the second thing is, and I think there's really two parts to this. One is you look at all their other players and they're fine, but it seems like that the sum of the parts is way better than the parts. Like, I like Chris Middleton. He's 6'8". He can handle the ball. He can shoot it. He's been really good in the playoffs. There's just, you just look at him and he doesn't, something about him doesn't look the part of a second banana. Maybe he's just not intense enough. Maybe he just isn't as fearsome on defense. I don't know. There's just something about him that doesn't strike me as, this guy's a clear number two player on the best team in the NBA. And then everybody else that plays significant minutes, we know Bledsoe and what he's done in the playoffs in the past. Brook Lopez has totally changed his game from being kind of a low post terror to a guy who shoots outside. And we know how good he's been on defense, but still, Brook Lopez, I'm not sure. I'm like, man, I love having Brook Lopez on my team. That guy's amazing. I just don't know that I feel that way. And then same thing, DiVincenzo. Like, he's good, but I don't know, is he proven in championship situations?
No.
George Hill.
Well, George Hill has proven that he can't make a free throw in key moments.
Right, and George Hill's good. Don't get me wrong. George Hill is very good defensively. George Hill led the league in three-point shooting this year. George Hill is a good player. But, again, in an NBA championship game, if George Hill's out there on the floor, do I trust him completely to come through? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I do. And you could just go down the whole Bucks roster, and all these guys, I think when you add them up, they're better collectively than what each guy individually looks like. And I think so much of what Milwaukee does is dependent upon Giannis getting into the lane and either finishing or kicking it out to guys for easy three-pointers. And last year when they lost to Toronto, those easy three-pointers went away for two reasons. One, they were just missing them. And two, Toronto made it really, really tough for them to get good looks. So they were stopping Giannis because Kawhi switched over to him and made it difficult on Giannis doing the things he normally does. And then the rest of that team was really, really good defensively and made those what were open three-pointers all throughout the season, made those three-pointers far more contested and made it more difficult. And I can see that scenario happening again when you start playing against the best teams once you get to the second, third round of the playoffs. You're not playing against teams where you can just shred their defense and hit open threes all day. Yep. You're going to have to make contested shots. Giannis is going to have to beat two or three guys. He's going to have to be able to knock down some threes. He's going to have to be able to shoot some 17-footers at the end of a shot clock. And all those things make me nervous because they're not what I would say is a traditional championship team. They just don't have the look or the feel of a traditional championship team. They're a juggernaut. They've been a great regular season team last year and this year. And we said it kind of going into the end of the season before the virus hit. And we said it going into the bubble. And we're still saying it now. Giannis and the Bucks are both in a prove it to me scenario. And until they do, I think we're all going to continue to have these doubts. Now, I won't be surprised if they prove it, but I can see the scenario where they get beat.
Yep. I'm going to say it, Mike. Toronto and Miami are the two teams that I think have a chance at being.
This is why the East doesn't scare me, is because, and I said this last week, I don't feel like any of those teams really has that guy either. Toronto, I'm not really that worried if they give Siakam the ball and say, hey, man, go to work in the last minute. I'm not really worried about that. I'm not necessarily worried about Tatum because I think, again, like I said, I think he's too young. I don't think he's going to lead them four rounds of the playoffs being the man at age whatever he is, 21. I just don't see that happening. We'll talk about the Sixers here in a second, but clearly they're just about finished. The Pacers, no. The Heat, I don't know. Jimmy Butler has barely shot any threes at all this year. For some reason, it seems like he's completely backed off shooting threes. And yeah, the Heat's a tough team. They're physical. They have some guys who can shoot it, but I don't know. Is Jimmy Butler that much better in the clutch than what Giannis is going to be? I don't know. I wouldn't put him in the top tier of guys I'd want to have the ball in the last minute either. So I don't think I think if the Bucks were in the West, I think their road would be a lot tougher. But I think in the East, the things that they do poorly, their flaws, I don't think there's as many teams that are equipped to expose those flaws in the East, especially with the Sixers' injuries and being compromised. I think the Bucks are going to get through the East pretty easily, and then whoever's coming out of the West, I think, is going to provide a much bigger challenge.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not saying that Toronto or Miami could knock them off, but if the Bucks keep playing the way they're playing, I won't say that I'm surprised that it happens. That's all I'm saying.
All right, that's fair.
All right, so the game is over, Mike. I'm sure you saw who won.
Portland. 134, Portland ends up winning. Dallas 131.
So now Portland, all Portland has to do on Thursday against the Brooklyn Nets, who've been somehow competent enough to remain in the seventh spot when Orlando's looked abysmal. But all Portland has to do is win, and they are guaranteed the eighth spot no matter what. A win gets them in to the eighth spot. I can't see them losing that game. The Nets literally are playing for nothing in that game. The Nets are locked into the seventh spot. I can't see Portland losing this game. Now, my predictions haven't always come true, Mike. Let's be clear. But I just don't see how that happens. I think Portland's a guaranteed eight spot, and I don't know if any of those teams behind them can beat them in two straight games, especially if Dame continues to play out of his mind.
Yeah, I would say the answer to that is probably no. I think Phoenix, based on their hot streak, would be the only team that you would say has a puncher's chance. They probably have, in Booker, they probably have the best player of any of those teams. Clearly, Memphis is not going to do it. I guess San Antonio, maybe Greg Popovich works some sorcery and somehow comes up with a plan to be able to beat Portland. But no, I think Portland, if Portland gets in, I would be stunned if they don't move on and play the Lakers. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, true. I mean,
let's leave the 8-9 seed alone. The Brooklyn Nets, we wanted to talk about them briefly. What about the fact that the Brooklyn Nets have won? They won today, right? They beat the Magic. So they're 5-2 in the bubble, the Nets. I mean, we didn't think they were going to win. I mean, we thought maybe they were going to beat the Wizards, and that's it. So all credit to the Nets for coming out and competing.
Well,
Jacques Vaughn, you know, is campaigning for the job next year.
I will say this, Mike. I can't wait till next year when they are losing at the beginning of the season, and it's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are on the floor, and we start to argue, well, why is it happening? Why are they losing
it's
the now?
Kyrie jinx again.
I know. Listen. The Kyrie stink isn't in Orlando right now. And once again, I want to say I love Kyrie as a player. He brought us an NBA championship. But he is just a bizarre dude and brings upon some bizarre antics that cause issues in, let's just say, if I'm trying to get a player to bring my team together, Kyrie would not be on my list. I'll just leave it.
The thing will be is, can Durant be the alpha dog and keep Kyrie in his place, kind of the way LeBron was able to do? I mean, I doubt it at this point. Kyrie's a little older, had a little bit more success. Durant doesn't seem like the same type of guy in terms of leadership, so it doesn't seem likely that that would happen. But as I said many times, Kyrie was a perfect second banana to LeBron here, and there's no way the Cavs even come close to sniffing the one NBA title that we won. Kyrie was phenomenal. He was amazing. He was unbelievable in that series in 2016. And we know he has it in him, but he has to be kept into his proper role on the team. And it's clear that from a leadership standpoint, he's not the guy you want leading your franchise. So maybe Durant can step up into that role and get him back to being the type of player that we know he can be based on his skill. But that's going to be an interesting chemistry experiment next year in Brooklyn for sure. And then let's talk Magic real quick. To me, they might be the most disappointing team in the bubble. The fact that they didn't climb up to the seventh seed, and then also the fact that they lost Jonathan Isaac. They've been, I mean,
it's pretty sad when they're the most disappointing team and the Wizards haven't won a game.
Well, but the Wizards, again, we knew the Wizards were going to be terrible. You thought the Magic could maybe go 500, and you thought there was no doubt just that Brooklyn has sort of outperformed what we all thought they were going to be. But if you're Orlando, you got to be disappointed that you didn't climb out of that A spot and avoid the Bucks and at least give yourself a chance against the Raptors, because they have no chance of winning. They're not going to win a game against Milwaukee.
Hey, Mike, going back to Portland, this is a Portland fest tonight. I saw stats, so I wanted to ask you, I'm sure you know the answer to this. Dame Lillard is the second player in league history to ever have 60 points in three games in a same season. Who's the other person?
Well, it's got to be Wilt.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one guy who's had 63 times besides, wow. See, now, if you would have said how many guys have had 63 times in a season, I wouldn't have guessed one or now two. I would have guessed that number to be
I would have thought Harden higher, had gotten higher, there, right?
Higher than that. I don't know. I mean, Harden, I would have said,
or Kobe?
I might have thought Kobe. I know Jordan, you know, Jordan's high game was only 69, so it's not like he had a ton of games in the 60s. And I know he had, I believe he's second to Wilt's, you know, 50, the number of times that somebody's had 50. But Wilt's number is like three times as much as Jordan's, I think, at least. So Dame's had some 60-point games, and obviously today they needed every single point that he could muster. So good for him.
Yeah, your dog's excited, Mike.
Dog's very excited. He's probably spotting some raccoons out there.
All right. We have two more things to talk about real quick. The first that we want to talk about is Ben Simmons out for the rest of the bubble experiment. Once again, this puts us into the precarious position of what is the expectation for the 76ers. And obviously, Embiid hurt his foot, so he hasn't played. And they're expecting him to play in the playoffs, but they're not guaranteeing it. And with Embiid, it might just be the way the wind blows each day. He might be able to play one game and not play, be able to play the next day. I will say teams that were afraid of playing the Boston may have been afraid to play the 76ers in the first round just because they kind of been their Achilles heel. I would bet right now that Boston is very happy if to remain in the three seed and play Philly, because I just don't think Philly's got it. I mean, Horford's terrible. Tobias Harris has played okay. Everyone else, I mean, I don't know. They're good. And if Embiid's on the floor, him and Shake Milton, they're gonna argue. It's just not gonna be good. So I can't believe I'm gonna pick Boston in that series, but I'm probably gonna pick Boston in that series. And I don't know your take on the Ben Simmons thing. And I know there's been rumors that he's gonna maybe get traded and the Cavs might have interest. I think that's a bunch of hogwash. I don't think there's any chance he's a Cavalier next year. And I don't even know if
Cavs
I want him.
Cavs certainly have interest. I mean, why would you not have interest if you're the Cavs?
Oh, no, I completely agree, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I would be interested for him to be on the Cavs, but I don't necessarily know that the Cavs would win a lot of games with him on our team. I mean, it depends what we have to give up. I don't know. I don't know.
I'd give up whatever we have. I mean, there's nothing on our roster that I would say is untouchable if you're bringing back Simmons, because Simmons at least makes you relevant. Now, you have to be worried about his injury history. Missed his rookie year, had the back injury. Now he's got this subluxation of his knee. It's a little bit worrisome. And so you'd wonder, would you want to give up a franchise haul in order to be able to bring in Simmons when he hasn't really been able to stay healthy for long stretches of his career? That would be my only hesitation. But as far as a player, if I was the Cavs, I don't think there's any doubt you'd put together whatever package
let me just say this.
Philly was open to trading him.
There's only one, I don't know, there's one player I wouldn't give up out of the young three.
K-
Kevin Porter?
Exactly. I wouldn't give Kevin Porter up. I would do everything in my power to keep him. I would give up Garland. I'd give up Sexton. I mean, I like Sexton a lot. I think he's a hard worker. I really do.
And he's gotten better. He's gotten better, and I think he's going to be a good player.
I don't know how he would fit with Simmons, though. Would he fit with Simmons?
Well, he's not really a – although his three-point shooting certainly got better over the course of this season, and by the end of the year, he was shooting it pretty well. And obviously having Simmons on your roster negates the worry that you have about him and Garland playing together as two little guards. You're not going to get a bigger guard in the NBA than Ben Simmons. So – but I don't think that you would not have any chance of prying Ben Simmons away from the Sixers without including Colin Sexton in the deal. I don't know how you would put together a package if you're Philly and not have Sexton included. I guess if you put Garland, Porter, and you gave him enough first round picks, maybe. But yeah, that seems like if you're Philly, you're getting nickels on the dollar if you don't get Sexton out of that deal. So I don't know. As far as what it does for Philly this year, I'm with you. I think at this point, I've written off Philly completely as a team that is going to be able to do anything. I would expect Boston to beat them pretty easily. You said it best when you said Embiid, who knows from game to game what you're going to get. He's hurt. He has the flu. He can't play. He's going through the motions. The guy's super talented. When he's engaged and playing hard, there's probably nobody better at the center position in the whole league. But I don't trust him. I don't trust the rest of their roster to come through in big moments. As much as I'm not a huge Celtics fan, I do think that Brad Stevens is a good coach. I do think they'll be prepared. And I would be stunned if that ends up being the matchup. I would be stunned if Boston didn't beat Philly pretty handily without Simmons.
Yep. All right. Anything else on that? I don't think I have anything else. Okay.
No.
So the last thing, NBA announced today that they're going to be having an all bubble team. It's kind of like the all NBA team, but after the play-in games are played, they're going to announce an all bubble team. Now, I don't know that I'm prepared right now to tell you who my all bubble team is. Maybe we'll save that for our episode coming up this weekend after the play-in game. We can make that decision, Mike. But if you were to pick a bubble MVP, I've got it narrowed to two people.
Just, again, this is just me thinking off the top of my head. To me, the guys who have stood out as being players that clearly have played the best in the bubble, TJ Warren.
Okay.
Devin Booker.
Okay.
Damian Lillard. Those are my three that leap off the page at me as I say these guys have played the best of the players who have been in the bubble, who have stood out, who have been consistent over the course. Oh, and I got one more for you.
Go ahead.
Porzingis.
Porzingis has been pretty good. My two were Dame and Booker. The only reason I don't include Warren is I think he's had two games where he hasn't been really good. He's been good, but not really good. I feel like every game Booker and Dame have played, and I know
Dame, they've been consistent.
They've been consistent. I know Dame missed two free throws in a crunch time situation. My argument against Porzingis would be I think he's fouled out three times in the bubble. Two or three times.
I mean, I don't have the bubble stat, just the straight bubble stats in front of me, but he had 36 again today. He went 7 of 9 from three. And I know he's had multiple games with over 30. I think he's probably had, I want to say he's had at least three games over 30 in the bubble. And, you know, people forget how good he was at times in New York before he blew out his knee. And especially for a guy that size to be able to come back from a devastating ACL injury.
Here's his games.
All right.
Here's his games. He had 39, 30, 22, 30, 26. He didn't play yesterday. And then he had 36. He sat out a game. I can't give him the MVP. Sorry.
Well, I'm not saying he's the MVP, but I'm saying if you're talking about guys that have to be under consideration, that's clearly he's averaging 30 a game, right?
Just about, yeah.
So, I mean, he's been really good. And we talked about, you know, a little bit with Dallas. You know, obviously they lost to Portland tonight, which was a setback for them in trying to climb up into that sixth seed. But what Luka did the other night to the Bucks with 36, 19, and 14, and then that between the legs pass, and he did the, you know, I mean, he just had some phenomenal assists.
Yep.
And so, you look at what you look at what those two can potentially be together moving forward if Porzingis can stay healthy, man, that team, those two guys together are really special. We know we had they had the all-time most efficient offense in league history, and that doesn't necessarily make sense when you look at the rest of their roster, and yet those two guys individually are really good. And yep. Luka does so many things. He's so similar to LeBron in the way he plays, in just controlling and being able to anticipate which way the defense is going to shift and then make the pass away from where the defense is shifting. He's just really, really good. And he's doing that at 21 years old. And so we know he's going to get better. We know there's a runway of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years where Luka is going to be one of the best 5 players in the league, if not the best. And Porzingis is never going to get to that level. But Porzingis has the ability to be a top 10 player in the league.
Yep. All right. So
and I don't know if he'll get there, but man. I'll
rattle off the other two stats just so that we interest the fairness here. Devin Booker, since the bubble, 27, 30, 35, 20, 35, 35, 35. That's pretty consistent.
Yeah, he's been really good. And he's needed 4 games. He's needed to be consistent, and he's needed to be really good, and he has been. So kudos to Devin Booker.
And then Dame's gone 29, 30, 21, 45, 22, 51, 61. And in those games, he's averaged over 8 assists per game too. He had 16 assists. That's a lot for Dame.
That is. His only ward is those 2 free throws.
Yep.
And I think they're clearly, it looks like, going to be able to overcome that. And I expect them to win their next game and qualify and then beat whoever it is that they're going to play.
There's no way they're losing. Whoever they play, there's no way they're losing 2 games. I can't buy it. I can't buy it. I'm going to say now, I hope Phoenix somehow is the other team. I would think that would be the best game. So whatever needs to happen for Phoenix, which I think would be, I think San Antonio and Memphis have to lose and Phoenix has to win for that to happen. So that's what I'm going to, and Portland has to win. And then after all that happens, I'm going to try to will that into existence, into the universe, Mike. So let's try to make that happen.
Let's see what we can do. Let me see if I can find Phoenix's scenario if Portland goes 2-0.
I'm pretty sure the only way they get in is San Antonio and Memphis have to lose and they have to win.
Yeah, so Portland goes 2-0. Memphis has to go 0-1. So basically all that has to happen is Phoenix has to win, Memphis has to lose. And if that happens, Phoenix is in.
Well, San Antonio doesn't impact them at all?
Not according to what I'm seeing here.
Okay.
Not according, because I think, I don't know what the percentage, let me look at what the percentage points is for which teams played more games. So Phoenix is 33 and 39 and San Antonio is 32 and 38. So Phoenix would get in based on percentage points. They'd be like 0.001 percentage points ahead because they've played 2 more. They will have played, I think, 1 or 2 more games than the Spurs overall. So if those two teams tie, Phoenix gets in based on percentage points. So in all honesty, I would expect that to happen. I think we're going to look at a Trailblazers-Suns 8-9 play-in games. So that'll be a lot of fun if that's what actually happens.
Yeah, just got to convince the wife to turn it on at 2:30 on a Saturday afternoon. So
yeah, good luck to both of us. That might be a background. That might be a background game while other things are going on. Either that'll be a game cast on my phone and then watch
it
later.
Honey, go take a nap. I'll play some games with the kids.
That's it.
TV on.
Yeah, good luck with that. I can't get away with that quite that easily. So, but you never know. Stranger things have happened. So we'll see what happens.
All right, I don't have anything else, Mike. We went way longer than we anticipated. Normal.
I called that. You said, "Hey, we'll do a short one tonight." So the one thing we didn't take care of off the top is, I think for those of you that are out there listening, we are probably going to do either a preview or a reaction to the playoff play-in games out west. So we'll probably do a weekend episode at some point before we come back with our regular Tuesday next week. And obviously during the playoffs, we're going to continue to always do our Tuesday episode, but I'm guessing that we're probably going to throw in some extra ones here and there as things happen. And we'll do some late night recording after everyone's
in bed. Do you know if the game goes to 2 game series goes to 2 games, is the second game going to be on Sunday or is it going to be on Monday? Do you know the answer to that question?
I should be able to tell you that. Let me see.
I couldn't pull it up on the schedule. I tried to
figure
it.
Like, I'm looking at it on ESPN. It doesn't have It doesn't say any games are scheduled. Let's see. I don't see it there. Here we go. I got it. Okay, I got it. Play-in game. Game one, Saturday, August 15th at 2:30 Eastern time, which is what you said. Game two, Sunday, August 16th, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time.
What are they picking these times for?
It's weird. You wonder why they're not having those games. Like, well,
if it was game two, I would put it at 8:30 on Sunday night. Put it in the prime time.
What's the argument about why would you put it at that? Maybe they're bowing to Donald Trump, who doesn't like the NBA and says that they're floundering. So,
maybe they're putting it at that time because they're trying to schedule the other games and they're trying to be mindful. That would be the only reason I would think that. Like, I don't know if the regular playoffs are going to start on Monday or not. But regardless, that's bizarre. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't know if I could pull the nap. I don't think I could pull the nap trick 2 days in a row.
Yeah, if you're trying to get that done 2 days in a row. So I don't know. But if Portland's the 8th seed, I would expect Portland to finish that off on Saturday anyway. So I think the Sunday game will be irrelevant.
All right, so you're saying I only have to do it on Saturday. Good call.
That's what I'm guessing.
Okay.
All right, let's wrap it up there. We want to thank everybody for listening. Again, don't forget to check out the other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network. We've got more NBA content coming, covering the Cleveland Cavaliers and covering the Memphis Grizzlies. Hopefully, very, very soon, we're going to have a podcast for every team and every market, and we're looking forward to that day. It's going to be here before we know it. So thanks to everyone for listening tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with E3 Analytics, so you can now purchase 3 of their exclusive new playbooks. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from Coach Don Showalter of USA Basketball, Coach Mike Flynn from the Illawarra Hawks in Australia, who coached LaMelo Ball last season, and Coach Tyler Whitcomb from West Michigan Aviation Academy. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.